This is the podcast of the German Historical Institute London, a research centre dedicated to supporting and connecting students and scholars from Britain and Germany. The podcast series presents current research in British, German and European history, as well as colonial and global history. For more information on the German Historical Institute London, future events, the GHIL Library, studentships and more podcast episodes, please visit our website at ghil.ac.uk.
Welcome to the GHIL podcast. My name is Kim Koenig and today I'm joined by Almut Ebke, UCL GHIL Visiting Postdoctoral Research Fellow, and Professor Wolfgang Knöbel, Director of the Hamburg Institute for Social Research, to discuss the research behind his GHIL lecture on social processes. How do we define a process? What types exist and how does our understanding of them reflect our historical and cultural context? In our conversation, we explore these questions while examining the role of storytelling in claims about social processes and why plausible process claims cannot be made without knowledge of narratological arguments. Good morning, Wolfgang. Thank you so much for joining us on the GHIL podcast today. In fact, the morning after your lecture, which was very fascinating. And I would love to just jump right in and ask you more about your research project. You were talking about historical processes, an under-theorized topic. If you could just tell us a little bit more about how your project came about and where it's going.
Yes, also thank you very much for having the chance to be there. As I said yesterday in a short remark, the project started when we were puzzled at a conference at the Frias in Freiburg, organized by Hans Joas, Jürgen Osthammer and myself on global history and global connection and global sociology and globalization. And the question at the end of the conference came up, what really is a process? How do we define a process? And in the end, basically nobody really knew how to define it, how to conceptualize it. It was just a vague everyday term. And from that on, I began to think about how to conceptualize processes. I started reading a lot within history, within sociology, realized that sociology at that time, it was, I think, 2017, 2018, was not very busy in theorizing social processes. And then I went into a completely different field, narratology within, you know, the humanities. And from then on, I realized also that the term modernity and modernization played a huge role in my thinking. And the topic of modernity, modernization, and processes began to interest me, and then it started. But in fact, I wrote the book on which the lecture was based very quickly. I used the time of the COVID-19 crisis because everything was closed down. And as a director, I had a lot of time, actually, and I think I wrote it in a year or so. So it was quite a quick experience.
You just mentioned narratology, and I was wondering if you could tell us a bit more about what is narratology? How does it explain the way in which history or historical events are translated into a story that we tell?
Well, as I have to say, I probably not only read a lot of within literary studies, but also philosophy. And one of my main figures, my reference figures, authors was Paul Ricoeur, who also wrote a lot about narratology and storytelling. And I think he was a kind of an anchor man. From him, I got many of the ideas, and he was the author. I read a lot and then went on to other fields like literary studies. Narratology basically is the question or the enterprise in order to ask, how is it possible to tell a story? What are the conditions of storytelling? What is the difference between a theory, let's say, and a story? What about the endpoints and starting points of a story? What are the epistemological questions related to stories? And these questions were very important for me when I theorize and get to theorize or to think about processes.
I was wondering, listen to your talk yesterday, if you were presenting a new master narrative yourself.
Yes, probably you could say that, because referring to narratology in a sense, of course, means that when I did it, I read a lot of stuff. And I realized, of course, that how people theorize stories is always dependent on a certain cultural context. So when I relied on Paul Ricoeur, I relied on a particular idea of storytelling or of narratology, as you think. And my point is not that I'm giving a kind of a universal theory of narratives. That's not my point. My point is simply that, and that was a point already mentioned in the lecture yesterday, every story, every narrative is based on a certain context. Without a certain context, a narrative is not to be understood. And that also means when I'm talking about narratology and the science of narrating stories, it's also context-based. So it's not a universal theory, it's context-based. And I completely admit that probably somebody from somewhere else, from China or from India, might have a different idea of storytelling. So my point is not I give you a kind of an end result that there's no debate any longer. My point simply is, if you are working in a Western context, trying to theorize processes, you have to come to terms with the idea of what is a story in a Western understanding. And I admit that other people from other cultures might have different understandings. But I think that's how science works. You have to discuss these things. But without narratology, that's my main point, telling processes oftentimes go simply wrong or are too deterministic or too strange in some sense.
Would that mean that we have to discard the concept of modernity altogether?
Well, it should have become clear, I think, from my talk yesterday that I don't like the concept of modernity. I think it was useful at a certain time. But nowadays, everybody talks about modernity, as I said yesterday, with all the adjectives, you know, repressive modernity, regressive modernity, explosive modernity. For me, it doesn't make much sense any longer. And particularly the question came up, of course, and that was the debate on multiple modernities. When you use it as a problem constellation, or even if you use it as an epochal term, the question immediately comes up, who are the people who are not living within modernity? Are those who are underdeveloped or who are backwards oriented? So are they not living in modernity? So you are having a kind of an epochal concept which is very much focused on a Western European or North American idea. And that excludes, for example, other people. That's basically the argument of Chakrabarti being in the waiting room of history and waiting that we as Indians are included then within modernity. And I think his argument is pretty convincing. And therefore, I think the concept of modernity has become a problem.
We're at the German Historical Institute in London. And I think, Almut, you asked this yesterday as well. And you just mentioned that it's definitely specific to Western context. But I was wondering, in how far have you encountered differences between cultures? And how do you propose to kind of come together in a, you know, research community when speaking about processes like this? Do we have to discard certain concepts altogether? Do we use them as reference points and then discuss how each of us understands these?
What I didn't talk about yesterday was the fact that when the term modernity came up as an epochal concept, that was basically shortly after the Second World War. And at that time, it began, at least within the German context, maybe the French context as well, as a very Catholic concept. Modernity was coined by some thinkers like Romano Guardini, Eugen Rosenstock-Krüssi, a Swiss sociologist as well. And modernity basically means an age which has to be overcome. So it was a very Catholic concept. We have seen all, you know, the troubles and the violence of the Second World War. We have seen the Holocaust. That basically means modernity is a bad epoch. It's a bad time, and what we are living through is a kind of a transition, and afterwards a new age will come up. So the very conservative Kulturkritischer discourse of the early 1950s wanted to overcome modernity, which was a very new concept. You know, mostly the Catholics talked about Neuzeit, not about modernity. So it took maybe 5, 4, or 6 years until other alternative visions of modernity came up, visions which were introduced into the German context by Jürgen Habermas and Ralph Dahrendorf. And they had a completely different understanding of modernity, of course, not a conservative Catholic one, but a more progressive one. So at the very beginning, It was a conflictual concept, a highly contested concept between different cultures, between different belief systems, between different ideas of progress. And I think that has been going on until now. It's still, I would say, a kind of a Kampfkonzept, or the, how to say it, I mean, at least an essentially contested concept. And probably you won't get rid of it, and it stays with us. And of course, when you're talking about different cultures nowadays, the idea of what modernity means in Latin America probably means something different than to us. We have experienced, for example, that modernity has become much more criticized because of, you know, the damage being done to the environment, to crises all over the place. But some other people in other cultures do have a lot of hope in the future. They still believe in progress. They might have different ideas of modernity. Not saying that they have wrong ideas, simply they are different. And therefore, I think you have to really realize that the context matters in this case. As the historians always would say, context matters, of course.
I would also say, I think it's, you know, important to differentiate between, you know, the analytical tool that modernity is and that we don't want, and the idea of modernity we find among the sources. And that's what we want to analyze. And we, I mean, I would say I'm not interested in modernity as an analytical tool, but I will happily look at it from the primary source perspective and try to understand what it means to people in different, you know, contexts.
Yeah.
I've got a cheeky question.
Yeah, it's a...
Would you prefer being a historian?
Well, to be honest, I mean, I was always a historical sociologist. I wrote my PhD about the development of police in the United States and Germany and Britain between 1800 and 1914. And if I'm really honest, I would say nowadays I have more contact to historians than to sociologists, which has a lot to do with the fact that for really, really strange reasons, historical sociology never made it in Germany. I mean, we have a very strong current within Anglo-American sociology. Historical sociology was a booming industry since the 1980s, but that was not taken up by the German discipline for a variety of reasons. It probably has to do with the historians themselves, because the Bielefelder social historians like Kocher and Wieler, they have been quite good sociologists, I would say. So they're, for example, Jürgen Kocher's Die Klassengesellschaft im Krieg is a very, very good sociological treatise, and probably you couldn't have done it much better if you would have been a real sociologist. So that basically meant that this field called historical sociology was occupied already by the social historians, and therefore there was not much room for anybody else within sociology. And therefore, I think it was Britain, Michael Mann, Anthony Giddens at a particular time, John A. Hall, which brought up historical sociology, and then the United States, Ida Scotchfield and others. So in late 1970s, early 80s was the booming period, which passed away in Germany. I mean, it just didn't happen, despite that we had Max Weber, for example, which is strange.
I take that as a yes.
Yeah, okay.
I think that's a nice point to end on. Thank you so much for joining us. That was a really fascinating discussion. I hope our listeners will enjoy it as much as we did. And of course, listen to your lecture, which will be available shortly. And we hope to see you again here soon.
I have to thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the German Historical Institute London podcast. Follow us on social media and check our website to keep up to date with new episodes.